Welcome to Kill Chain, a platform cybersecurity podcast presented by Fleet Defender. I'm Marcus Q, and I'm here with Terry Reiner.
Hey, everybody.
And Kendall Bricko.
Hey, how's it going?
Today, we're going to talk about agriculture and cybersecurity, but before we get into that, I know we're going to be traveling this week. So if you're at the TMC conference in Orlando, come check us out. Kendall, you want to tell anybody anything about the booth?
Hey, all I got to say is we have some really cool stuff that we're going to show you, so come check out our booth when we're at TMC.
What's our booth number?
1037.
I was actually prepared for you not to know that.
I know. Wow.
I'm actually kind of surprised you knew that.
Actually, cool. I don't even know if that is the right booth number. So let me just verify.
That's the way to do it. Just make it up and no one knows anymore.
Watch. It's just an absolute perfect competitor to Fleet Defender in 1037.
Yeah. And like, and they have this huge crowd because, like, you know, everybody listening shows up. And great job, Kendall.
Wow. Nice.
Hey, you know, I do what I can.
You don't get time to look it up. We're moving on. So today I really want to talk about connected farms and then kind of the cybersecurity around those connected farms. So connected farms being, you know, modern day farms today use so much different technology. You know, I've seen everything from cattle tags that track the sickness of animals, you know, drones that fly overhead and UAVs that fly overhead that take LIDAR of fields to see what needs more fertilizer or water to, you know, help with, I don't know, maintaining, I guess, how much you use and spend. There's so many examples, and we're actually located in Nebraska, where we're kind of the heartland of all of this stuff. So, honestly,
well, first Iowa might disagree.
Okay, hold on, that's fighting words. But yeah, just curious, like, what are some cool, you know, farm ag tech stuff that you guys have seen?
Well, it's, you know, there's a lot of disruption in the agriculture, you know, sector right now about data. It's all about data. I mean, artificial intelligence has been just disrupting every industry. And so, I mean, you can do like multi-spectral sensing from space and you'll know exactly where in your field it's getting enough water, not getting enough water, where, you know, it's being, you know, impacted by different environmental or man-made factors. It's insane. Now they're doing it from drones. They're doing it from, I mean, even at the Consumer Electronics Show, like John Deere displayed one of their new planters. And instead of just spraying water the whole time as it's planting, like, it actually has the sensors to show, okay, pop the hole, drop the seeds, squirt the water. And so it saves tons and tons of water, which is a critical resource. So saves, you know, farmers money while still doing the job that it needs to do.
Wow.
So it's all about data.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I mean, gosh, from space, farming from space. I'm just, as the marketing guy, I'm thinking of so many cool taglines that you can have for those types of companies.
Right?
It's just so cool. Yeah, Kendall, anything you've seen?
Yeah, so the more autonomous farming equipment is becoming more prevalent these days, and they're replacing humans just with AI, machine learning, and the machines will just take off on their own and figure out what it needs to do.
Where are they taking off to?
They take off to wherever they need to go.
That's fair enough.
And you know what? I think most people think about this and think about farmers as kind of this, like, I don't even know, like 1950s vignette of farmers, of like a guy who's resistant to change and resistant to technology. But honestly, a lot of the family farms that I know just from being in Nebraska and people I've met, they're all welcoming it, right? I mean, think about GPS on tractors to help make sure that rows are straight and good. Like, it... they adopt it. Well, they're adopting it no problem.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You know what I would actually call a lot of farmers is hackers.
Really?
Oh, yeah, because they are trying to find a way to do a job, right? And if the tractor breaks down, like, you got to fix the tractor. You can't wait for the mechanic to come out. Like, you have a job to do. Like, and it's a very important job. It's critical to national security and just life in general. And so, you know, there's just, you know, some of the most resilient and resourceful people I think I have ever met in my life.
Yeah.
So, go ahead, Kendall. Think that farmers need to be very IT intellectual, or can they just figure out what needs to be done with their farming equipment and just get it done?
I don't know. I think it's kind of a mix of both. Like, you know, artists need to be familiar with paintbrushes and paint. You know, farmers need to know their equipment and how it's connected and talking. I mean, do they need to be IT specialists that can wire up a network? I don't think so. You know, that's, you know, you've got a lot of the OEMs and, you know, platform providers like, you know, the John Deere's and the Ravens that are doing all the connected farms, and there's solutions out there. But, you know, I think they have to understand how it works, because when it breaks in the middle of planting or harvesting season, you don't have time for someone else to fix it. It's on you. You got to get it done.
That's a good point. I wonder if there is actually a market for almost like agricultural IT that can travel around based on need, right? Like, so like if something happens, something breaks, you travel out there immediately to fix something, especially with the rise of autonomous, like you're saying. Is I think, you know, this is my kind of like pessimistic view, is I think in the future you're going to see a big corporate farms is like run by corporations that are just autonomous driven farms.
Yeah, because if somebody's in the equipment, they know something's wrong with it. But when somebody's not in the equipment and something's wrong with it, how do they proceed?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, there's, you know, on some of the semi tractor trailers, like what Kodiak Robotics is making, fully autonomous, level 4. And they've got different protocols to, like, if the worst happens, stop in lane. Like, literally just turn on the flashers and stop where you are. Don't even pull off the road. All the way down to where, like, if something minimal happens and they have to stop, then they can go to the next exit and then find a place to park or whatever. And so, one of the things that John Deere was showing is they've got a sensor that detects when there are objects ahead of the tractor. So, like, for example, a rock is in your field or whatever, and it's large enough and it doesn't know what to do. It'll just stop so that way the blades don't hit it and then destroy a blade. Mm. And so it'll just stop beforehand, send an alert, and then the farmer gets an alert on their phone and they know, okay, you know, this tractor stopped. I need to go out and find out why it stopped.
Yeah, that actually brings up an interesting point too of like the money savings that it brings. I know I was seeing something that it's like the additional yield and savings is something like $500 billion if all farms were using like what is today modern technology, right? And all that's changing so quickly. And that's an interesting point, even like what you're saying of, you know, even just replacement parts, not things not breaking because you're hitting things that you wouldn't normally see with the naked eye, but also just additional yields and all this stuff. It's pretty wild. And I wonder what the balance of that will be if, let's say, one of us owned a farm, of what it looks like to invest in that technology versus the savings that it actually brings you. So like if you were a farmer, what do you think? What would you do? Invest in technology because X, or, you know, save on it because of Y?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, you're, a lot of times you're one person, maybe a few farm hands, you know, or, you know, a fleet of kids or whatever. And the more land you have, obviously the harder it is. So I'm not a farmer. So I can't really speak for them, but I do think that the data, and the AI revolution is really disrupting the farm. And, you see a lot of people really adopting it because land is a finite resource. We're not getting more of it. I mean, unless you're the UAE and you can actually build your own islands, we're not getting more land. And so, but what we are getting is a lot more people. You told me earlier, like 9.3 billion by 2030, 2050?
2050, yeah.
By 2050. 9 billion. And so we need to grow a lot more food on a lot less land because people need homes. And I mean, you look around Nebraska, even just where we're at here, every day I see another cornfield torn down in order to put up houses. Mm-hmm. So we have less land to grow on and a higher population to feed. So we have to get smart about this. We need to use the data. We need to use the technology. It's the only way to go. And more importantly, kind of back to what we talk about here is we got to protect it because now it's a major target.
Right. Right. And that kind of gets us into, you know, talking about really like, you know, all this farm ag tech is really Internet of Things. It falls in the same category. And I think, you know, for myself, at least when I first started thinking about Internet of Things and IoT, I thought about smart fridges or appliances and things like that. But really, it's the same as combines, as anything in the field. So in terms of how these devices communicate, because that's really the big thing with IoT is it communicates back to something, which ends up being an attack vector and ends up being something that you need to secure. But really just backing up, how do these devices really communicate? And what are kind of the things that it uses to talk back to a system?
Great question. I mean, honestly, exactly like all your appliances. You can go to modern day farms and you can find Wi-Fi and Bluetooth implementations that are out there. Now, you have some limitations, though, because now you're talking about thousands of acres and moving parts all over those thousands of acres. And so they've invented other technologies like LPWAN. That's one. It's a low power, wide area network protocol that allows you to talk over greater distances. You've got Wi-Fi 6. That's another one, kind of a emerging technology there. But you also have 5G. and 5G and SATCOM, you know, satellite communications. So John Deere, you know, even just what was it last year, they came out and they said they're going to put a SATCOM terminal on every single new combine and tractor. So that way they can monitor and communicate from space. So doesn't matter how big your plot of land is, you can probably communicate with it at that point.
Yeah, it really seems like a lot of these communication methods are going to end up in space. I mean, I think about like Starlink. You know, I saw something on even Reddit the other day that was some guy who worked remotely but lived in one of those Sprinter van homes, you know, that kind of traveled the country and can work from a national park because the internet is just based off satellite. And so it's everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. As these constellations grow in low Earth orbit, you know, you don't need these geosynchronous satellites that are sitting up at geo that, you know, geo being like it's a fixed location over the Earth, kind of like what like Sirius XM satellites are. You know, these are low Earth orbit constellations like Starlink. And you've just got so many of them that you have always on broadband connectivity anywhere in the world. So that like unlocks rural areas, you know, high bandwidth internet connections.
Yeah. And with that unlocking, I think you really start to enter that cybersecurity field, right? I mean, we've seen attacks on ag sector many times. I know even just last year, I think it was last year or 2 years ago, JBS was knocked out. A couple of their plants were knocked out by a ransomware attack. And they had to pay like $11 million, but they supply like something like 1/5 of all the meat in the United States. And that's a big deal. I mean, that's a big deal to get knocked out by a ransomware attack. But even just thinking on the smaller level of somebody running smaller ransomware attacks against, you know, a family farm, a corporate farm, anything like that is possible now, especially with what you're saying.
So Terry, how do you think a ransomware attack, like how does that affect a company specifically?
Oh, completely. Well, in two different ways. One is loss of productivity. So like if, let's just say like all your farming equipment gets ransomware, you know, obviously you're not using it anymore. But also financially, not indirectly and directly, right? So like indirectly, because you're not using it, therefore you're not harvesting and able to sell, what you're harvesting. But then directly, and you got to pay the ransom if you want to get it back. And you know, the FBI, like you just mentioned, you know, a couple of years ago, the FBI in September of 2021 released a memo out saying that ransomware attacks against the food and agriculture industry were on the rise, and average ransoms were like $20.3 million. Like that's huge. Like that is not insignificant.
So that ranges anywhere from small companies to large companies. It doesn't matter who they are. It's just these cyber criminals are going out there just implanting ransomware wherever they can go.
Well, what's actually crazy too is, and it's almost counterintuitive because you think of big companies as being the ones with the deepest pockets. And so if you were to do a ransomware attack against a big company, you could ask for more, but they also have the best security. And so people are going after the smaller companies because they typically don't have as strong
all of the infrastructure and security and networks.
Right.
And
you know, what's funny is we saw the exact same thing in attacks against the U.S. government and the military, or what they call the Defense Industrial Base or the DIB. They wouldn't go after Raytheon. They wouldn't go after Northrop Grumman, Lockheed Martin. Like they're big, they're huge, and they got tons of money that they can really put into security. What they were doing is they were going after the little small defense contractors that are the subcontractors to the big ones. And I remember, I don't know if I should really mention them by name, but there was a major defense contractor who was actually compromised through a subcontractor. So they targeted the subcontractor who didn't have as much cybersecurity and defense, got in there and then actually infected files that were then sent to the prime, and then got into the prime systems. And so they, you know, you're going to go after the path of least resistance, right? Like that's just the smart way to go. If you're an attacker, go where, you know, there's one, a gap in security, and two is going to be the highest possible chance of achieving your goals.
So when you work with and talk to other people, that doesn't mean that you're safe, because if somebody gets a breach, like you were saying, if they send something and they've been breached, then it can affect multiple people, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, even the big attack on Target, when they got into the point of sale terminals and were stealing everybody's, you know, financial data, that actually went through a HVAC contractor, not Target. They weren't targeting they weren't targeting Target directly. Yeah. They went after a subcontractor and then were actually able to use their credentials to then gain access to Target's networks and then infiltrate their point of sale terminals. And the rest is history.
It's incredible that all that can start with somebody clicking on a link.
Oh, yeah.
An email. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what's so wild is you hear these stories of like massive disruptions, massive financial impacts, just massive hacks that can start with watch this cool cat video and you click the wrong link in an email. It really can all go back to
there. And you might not even hear about like the initial attack vector that it happened to, but you hear about the large corporation that it ended up happening to just through the network that they send things through.
Yeah. And I think that's what gave birth really to this idea of zero trust. Like that's the big thing in cybersecurity right now, right? Is like these zero trust frameworks and zero trust mentalities. And what it basically boils down to, just to simplify it down, is don't trust data from anyone. So even if it's an email that your mom sent you, like don't necessarily trust any link in it because someone could be one, pretending to be your mom, or two, they could have already, you know, infiltrated your mom's computer and are now, I mean, have you got those messages from Facebook from somebody that you're like, I know this person didn't send me that.
I never trust anything my mom sends me in the first place. Oh, so,
you know, what's funny.
I hope Mama Kendall is not listening to this right now.
Hey mom. I love you. Just so you know,
you know, so obviously we all work together and I remember my first week I sent Terry an email and I attached something to it and needed him to look at it. And I think his response was, I'm not opening that.
That's right. Like, oh, okay. Zero got trust. It, that's it, right.
I've received multiple emails from Terry, quote unquote, saying, hey, send me your phone number. I have an urgent message or urgent task. And I'm like, Terry, was this from you? And no, it never was. But that one time I send my phone number, you know, something will happen.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking to, you know, got a little into the track of kind of ransomware and different breaches into kind of more corporate security. But really, it's very similar with these IoT devices, right? Is it like you can still get in the same way by just getting into the network? So somebody on a computer clicks the wrong link in an email, they infiltrate that system that's connected to their equipment. They can get in through that pathway.
Yeah. And that's only one path, right? Like you can move through, like there was a really famous malware called Stuxnet. I don't know if you have heard of it, but it was all over the news probably 10 to 12 years ago, but it was an attack against the Iranian uranium enrichment plants. And what it would do is it would actually change the speed of the centrifuges, at least as far as I understand it. It would change the speed of the centrifuges so that way when they're trying to enrich uranium, they weren't getting the results they needed to make nuclear bomb grade uranium. But the entire time, the entire system was telling the operators that everything is fine when it really wasn't fine. And so it was kind of interesting. They actually infiltrated through Windows, through a Windows computer, and then from there went down into the actual like PLCs, the programmable logic controllers that controlled the centrifuges. And so that was just the mechanism. Same thing with like the IoT devices, right? Like you have what's called a technology stack, and you know everything's implemented kind of along that stack. So you've got like the wireless interface, the wireless drivers, the operating system, the user land application area of the operating system, you know, all the way down to like hardware. And so it really, you know, as you connect devices, if there is a flaw anywhere in that tech stack, it can be leveraged by attackers to do something. Now, whether it allows them to completely take over the system or just remotely shut it down, you know, it just really depends on what the vulnerability is and where in the tech stack it is.
And so what can we do? What can farmers do today?
It's defense in depth, you know, just like anything else. You know, you got to defend your cloud infrastructure. You have to defend the wireless connectivity to each of the devices, and you have to, you know, defend the device themselves.
So what would you say is the best way to defend these things?
There's a lot of different things. It just depends on what it is, right? Like you're not going to take a firewall for your cloud environment and put it on your tractor. You know, like your tractor and the technology that's in the tractor, the combine, is very different from the technology that is, you know, operating within the cloud. And so you've got to have everything from monitoring, detection, alerting, response, you know, the whole gamut of cyber defense at each layer of your network. So that way you're, you know, if one is compromised, you know, there's less likely that the attacker can get to what they want because they're isolated to just where they attacked.
And so that's really what you're talking about, defense in depth.
Yeah, it's limiting the impact should there be a breach. Because the thing is, a lot of people, you know, there's still this mentality where people think, you know, if I'm breached, it's like riding a motorcycle. It's not if I'm going to get in an accident. It's when mm-hmm. I'm in an accident, right? And you got to think of it the same way from a cybersecurity perspective. It's not if you're going to get breached. It's when you're going to get breached. And you have to just assume that you're going to get breached. And so what you want to do is when that occurs, you want to isolate the attacker as much as you can. So that way, when you're breached, what is actually compromised is very, very small. And if you can do that, then you're going to actually have a lot higher layer of protections because now, yes, I attack your combine or your cloud environment or whatever it is, right? And I get a beachhead. I get a point of presence on your system or on your network. But then what I can do with it is very, very limited. Now I have to go to the next stage. I have to compromise something else and then something else and then something else and then something else. And that's going to cost a lot of money to like generate all those exploits, to generate all that malware. And it's going to take me a lot of time. And every single time I do it, there is a huge risk that you're going to detect me doing it. And then you're going to stop me from doing it. And that's what we want, right? Like you want to have so many different hoops that the attacker has to jump through that at some point you're going to detect them and able to stop them and get them out of your network before they get to what they're trying to get to.
Well, I guess that's a perfect ad for Fleet Defender.
Yeah. Yeah, that worked out pretty well, didn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. Well, guys, thank you for joining today, and thank you for listening. This has been Kill Chain, Platform Cybersecurity Podcast, presented by Fleet Defender. That's fleetdefender.com. Give us a look and schedule a demo today.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Yeah, until next time.
Thanks, everybody. Wow, 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 wow.